Okay, we're going to be starting in chapter 2 tonight of Daniel. We almost got there last week, and to kind of bring everybody up to speed, we got a couple tonight that maybe wasn't here last week and had missed a week. And then Charlie has got on our website, he's got the first week, the second week, and the third week. And there's CDs available and the shortcut to the 3D map of Babylon. It's really good. So when you go down to Winter Bible Study and go down to the session, whether 1, 2, or 3, then you got a 3D Babylon. That's really interesting. It's like driving right through town. And it helps understand a little bit about how big Babylon was and how glorious that it was. To kind of back up a little bit and bring everybody up to speed, let's go into 2 Kings chapter 20 and verses 17 and 18. And here is Hezekiah, and this is the things that brought about 100 years later that brought about what took place in Babylon and the reason that Daniel was there. And, you know, the Lord takes our mistakes sometimes to work his will out. And sometimes the world seems like it's so out of control, but it's never out of control because the Lord understands that from the beginning. And when you see how Hezekiah done, he says, "Behold, the days come that all that is in thy house and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried into Babylon. Nothing shall be left," said the Lord. Now, what had happened, the benevolence committee from Babylon had come in because Hezekiah was sick, and he kind of got absorbed in their friendliness and their supposedly caring for him, that he showed them everything. Verse 18, and he said, "And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." And this was fulfilled in a little over 100 years. Now, what I want you to see next in 2 Kings chapter 21 in verse 6, follow up, because he had a son named Manasseh. And Manasseh, his epitaph on his grave, it tells us, he said, "And he made his sons pass through the fire and observe times and use enchantments and dealt with the familiar spirits and wizards. He wrought much wickedness in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger." He had his own children sacrificed to the false gods. Now, that's how fast downhill that Judah went. Hezekiah had died. But notice that, and then go with us verse 20 and 23. And this one has to do with Manasseh. And he said, "And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his father did." In verse 23, "And the servants of Ammon conspired against him and slew the king in his own house." So after Hezekiah, we had Manasseh, and we've seen what he done. He done that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And then Ammon comes in, and his own servants kill him, and he's only, as a king, 2 years. But then we go to the 22nd chapter of 2 Kings in verses 1 and 2. And this is the man that we can really relate to, is a young man that really centered his life upon the Lord. Now, his father dies at 24 years old. He's born to his father at 16, and he's 8 years old when he takes over and begins to reign. And he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jedidiah, the daughter of Adai of Boshchai. And then look at verse 2, because he had to go 300 years in reverse to find a role model. He said he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Now, we're living in a day today that it's hard to find a role model for a young person. A young boy or a young girl today has really got a hard time finding somebody to mentor, to model their life after, someone to walk in the steps of. And what this man done, when you look back at his father Ammon, his grandfather Manasseh, his great-grandfather Hezekiah, and you go all the way back down the line, you come 300 years in reverse, and you find David. And he says, "And walked in all the ways of David his father, and turned not aside to the right hand or to the left." So Josiah understood that if he was going to succeed for the Lord, that he was going to have to find somebody besides his own house to follow. And, you know, that is sad, but that is true today. We see that everywhere we go. We see children every day that don't have a parent that they can even take advice from. So when you look at this, think about what had led up to this Babylonian captivity. Now go with us in Daniel chapter 1 in verses 19 through 21. Now what's taking place here, Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which is Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, they've been brought in, and they've been eating soup. It's called pus, and it's actually pronounced pus. And when you look it up, it's made out of lentils and peas and beans. It's bean soup. So they've been eating bean soup and water for 3 years. But they have fared better than everybody else that was eating the king's meat and the king's wine. And the Lord prepared them, and he kept them. Daniel says that he didn't want to defile himself with the king's meat, and he separated himself. And notice what he says here. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. So after 3 years, they would bring them in, and they stood before the king, and they would be questioned. Now, they was already wise men. The Lord had prepared them, and we'll look at that just in a minute as we look back at the Chaldean, what they was taught. And look in verse 20. And in all manners of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Now, we're going to be dealing with those people tonight, too. And we think of magicians and astrologers today as just crooks, and they are. There's not an honest one in the pile. But what I want you to also realize that in this day and in the last days, and especially also in the book of Acts, these people have a certain amount of demonic power. Don't cut them short that they're nothing, although many of them are. And this right here is Daniel was compared against them. And Daniel come out 10 times better. Look in verse 21. And he said, Daniel contended even in the first year of King Cyrus. And we talked about that. The key of this is when you go into chapter 9, 8, 9, and 10, you find out that Cyrus took over after 70 years of captivity. He come in, especially in chapter 5, and took over the kingdom. But we find in chapter 8 and on. So Daniel, actually, he spent 70 years in captivity. He was under 20 years old when he got there because he's referred to as a child. So he's 90 years old, and he continues always the first year of King Cyrus. So he lives just a little past the den of lions. And I guess he probably wished he could have died that night, but the Lord led him through that and give him a little bit more. But Daniel's life is a life that's very unusual as a prophet because it continued for such a long time. Now, let's go to Daniel chapter 2, and let's look at a couple things here in verses 1, 2, and 3. Now, we've been headed here for a long time, but hopefully the groundwork that we've tried to lay will help a lot. And he tells us in the second year of the king of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams. And I noticed that more than one. There's only one that's important, but he had many dreams. And I'm sure that's happened to a lot of us. You get up of a morning and you're wore out because you've had 3 or 4 dreams. The other night, I've been taking a steroid, and it makes you real crazy dreams. And I actually done some electrical work, and I'm not sure that I really didn't go do it. I've got to check on it. I might have got up and done it. You can't hardly sleep, so you're not real sure what you did and didn't do. But he dreamed dreams wherein his spirit was troubled and his sleep broke for him. So he woke up troubled about it because he knew it was important. In verse 2, and the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. Now, these people right here, there's 4 categories of them. And I want us to look at all of them because each one of them is unique in itself. And these particular people are in much power, but they are very limited in their power. Now, let's go in the book of Exodus chapter 7 and look at a couple of things. Because we meet these people in Egypt. And when we meet them in Egypt, this is the Lord trying to bring Israel out of captivity after 400 years. In Egypt, and he brings them out, but they have to stand before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's pretty hard-headed about it, and he don't really want them to go. So Moses and Aaron is told to go in and to Pharaoh, and they did so as the Lord had commanded them, and what they were supposed to do is cast down Aaron's rod, not Moses' rod, but Aaron's rod, before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. Now, that's literal. That's exactly what happened, but notice what happens in the next verse here. Then Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, now the magicians of Egypt, they also did in like manner with their enchantments. So don't forget that the devil does have a certain amount of power. They was able to do the very same thing with their enchantments. Now look with us in verse 12. For they cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents, but Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. God's power was greater, but they still had power. That's why when we're dealing with a lot of these things, and when you're dealing with people today, we got to realize that there is a certain amount of demonic power in this world, and we're going to get into that tonight too, because it plays in to what's taking place here in Babylon, because what happens in Babylon will happen in the last days in the last Babylon. Go with us in verse 22. He said, and the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened, neither did he hearken unto them as the Lord had said. And here they turned the water into blood. Look with us in Exodus 8 and 7. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs out of the land of Egypt. They was even able to call the frogs up. So they were able to change their staffs, their rods into serpents. They were able to change the water into blood. They were able to change to cause these frogs by command to come up out of Egypt. So these things they were all able to do. Look at verse 18 and 19. And he said, and magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice. Now, this is where the dust was changed into lice. But notice what happens here. He says, but they could not. So there was lice upon man and upon beast. Now, the Lord stopped them short here. They was not to create life from dust. That kind of puts it back into Genesis when the Lord makes man out of the dust of the earth. The Lord kind of puts the brakes on here and stops it short of that. So when you look at this right here, we want to see that there's all these limitations. Verse 19. And he said, then the magician said unto Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. Nothing like being honest, are they? And they knew that they had reached their limit, and they knew that how it was done by Moses and Aaron was done by the finger of God. This thing's about to go out, Charlie. What I want us to look at is in the book of Acts, chapter 13. In Acts, chapter 13, the apostle Paul, here called Saul, he's street preaching. And a lot happens in this era of time, and this is shortly after they go from Antioch and go into the first missionary journey. And he said, then Saul, who also was called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him. Now look at the next thing that takes place. And he said, O full of all subtlety. Now this man is a man that is a sorcerer. And he says, in all mischief, thou child of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? And that's what the devil was doing here, working through these people, these sorcerers. They were perverting, trying to prevent the right ways of the Lord. And Paul was contending with these things everywhere that he went. Now, let's go in the book of Revelation, chapter 9, and let's look at a couple of things here. Now, in Revelation, here, what we wanted you to see is we're moving forward 2,000 years from the time of Acts chapter 13. Now, in Revelation chapter 9, what I want you to think about here is this is toward the last 5 months of the end of the tribulation. And this, the things that's taking place, these armies is coming out and they're killing a third part of the people. And the people that's witnessing this is seeing a third part of the world, all humanity, being killed right before them. And you would think things like that would wake people up. And he says, by the fire and the smoke and by the brimstone, and these are the things that are issued from these armies out of the bottomless pit. And he said, by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. Now, look close at what he says here in verse 20 and 21. He says, and the rest of the men which were not killed with these plagues yet repented not of the works of their hands. Now, you think, you see things all the time and you say, why don't people wake up? When we see the world, the condition it's in today, and we see 20-year-old people and their life is upside down and they look at what's going on, you would think that would be enough to cause people to waken up and look up. But notice what's taking place here. The world is coming to an end, is the world that they know. And the rest of the men which were not killed, two-thirds of them were not killed, but a third of them were. They've lost people they knew. Yet repented not of the works of their hands, and that they should not worship devils. And during the tribulation, the world is going to be more religious than it ever was, and devil worship will be a part of that. And idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk.
Now, that's a place to get help from, ain't it? An idol that you have made and crafted yourself, and yet you're looking to it. And look at the next verse. And he said in verse 21, neither repented they of their murders. Now, what I want you to see, there's four categories here. And if you went to Atlanta, Georgia tonight, if you went to Detroit, Michigan, if you went to Chicago, or you went to Columbia, South America, anywhere you went, and you run up on a drug cartel, these four things right here is what makes them up. Neither repented they of their murders, and a drug cartel will always be a murdering bunch, nor of their sorceries. Now, we're going to deal with that just in a minute. Nor of their fornication, that's always in there, nor of their thefts. So the drug dealers, and what I want you to see right here is this word sorceries. Now, up to this point in the scriptures, it deals with witchcraft. In the book of Acts, it deals with witchcraft. But here, it takes a different slant. And this particular word in the book of Revelation chapter 9, it comes from a word that we get our word pharmacy from, or medication. Look what it says there. Also sorcery and witchcraft. So it's interchangeable, but look what it says down here at the bottom, because 5331, which is sorceries, comes from the word 5332, and that's a Strong's number. Does everybody know what a Strong's concordance is? That's a book that gives you information, the meaning of certain words. And here he says it's the word pharmacus, and when you go on down, it means a spell-giving potion, a druggist, a pharmacist, or a poisoner. Now, in the last days, in the Great Tribulation, this world is going to be drug drunk. That's the only way they're going to be able to stand it. If you think people's using drugs today, they're going to be using drugs more and more as we see the day approaching. In Revelation chapter 9, and look again at that verse, in verse 21, neither repented they of their murders, nor their sorceries, nor their fornication, nor their thefts, because drugs control their lives. They see no reason to change nothing. We see that every day, and it's going to just get worse. Look in Revelation chapter 18. Revelation chapter 18 and verse 20. He says, rejoice over her, thou heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. Now, we're going to touch something here tonight that we're going to deal with in more in depth as the time goes on. This has to do with the last Babylon. Now, the first Babylon that we see in Scripture is in the book of Genesis chapter 10. It was under the name of Babel, or there in the lands of Sinar, which was built by Nimrod. But the first world power that is noted as being a world power was Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon that we're studying in the book of Daniel. It will go away. It went away. And the last Babylon will not be that kind of Babylon, but it will be another Babylon. We'll get into that more next week also. But he says, avenge you on her, talking about the prophets. Now look at the next verse, verse 23 and 24. He said, in the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee, for thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by their sorceries were all nations deceived. It's the same word again. It's the poisoner, the drugs. And these things is prevalent in the last days, and it's going to be how the world deals with the Great Tribulation. If you think drugs are high today, think about trying to buy them during that time. And without the mark of the beast, you're not going to be able to get your drugs. So everybody that's a drug addict is going to take the mark of the beast. That's something to think about there too. Now notice what it says here in the last, let's see, verse 24. He said, and in her was found the blood of prophets. Now this city Babylon that we're talking about here is a city different than the Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon was a kingdom. It was a most powerful kingdom with a great army. But this Babylon here that he's talking about is a city. And this city has commerce that is feeding the whole world. And the riches of Babylon is taking care of all the world, yet Babylon is on fire at this time. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and all that were slain upon the earth. So she is guilty, whoever she is, of the blood of prophets and saints and all that were slain upon the earth. So there's a great responsibility, a great debt has been laid upon this last Babylon that we see here. Has anybody got a question right in there? We will not be put in that position. the mark of the beast will be instituted during the Great Tribulation and probably toward the middle of the tribulation. And by the middle of the tribulation, we've already been gone for 42 months. So Bill's question about us dealing with the mark of the beast. Now, some people believe the church goes halfway through the tribulation. And I don't fall out with people that say that, but I feel like biblically that don't fit. But if you do believe that, then it kind of puts you up right to the point of then having to resist the mark of the beast. But biblically, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 10, that we're delivered from the wrath to come. So we are not going to be dealing with that, Brother Bill, and not be put in a position to have to partake of that. The Lord already got us out of here. So that being the case, you know, it's not something we're going to have to deal with, but the world is going to have to deal with it. And it's what we just got through reading. They're going to be dealing with it in that day. Now, let's go down, and we've looked at the magicians and the sorcerers, but let's look at the astrologers and the Chaldeans. The astrologers, eight times in the book of Daniel, he deals with these people. But I want you to look in Isaiah chapter 47, verse 13, because Isaiah is talking about Babylon here, and he's talking about a time that's coming when God brings judgment upon Babylon some 150 to 175 years in the future. But what I want you to see is the categories that the Lord uses here to tell us what an astrologer is. Thou hast wearied in the multitude of the counselors. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, and the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from these things that shall come upon thee. And what the Lord is doing here through Isaiah is all these people that you've relied on so heavily, you need to see what they can do for you when I show up. Because when the Lord's wrath comes in, these people will be no help. So he says the astrologers are stargazers and monthly prognosticators. And I guess a few people in here read your horoscope, don't you? Come on, guilt's on everybody's face in here. I don't know what mine is.
I don't know. I just read it because everybody else reads it.
Yeah. What's your prognostication this month? You got to.
I don't really know.
Okay. Margie's very devout, I can tell you. But these people, when it really comes down to it, all these people that people kind of depend on, really is not much help when you get down to the end, are they? When you stand before the Lord, all this time that people wasted on things like that was time wasted for sure. Now, let's look down in about the Chaldeans. Now, that sounds a little more common, don't it? And let's look in Genesis chapter 11, verse 28. And this is where Abraham came from. And we know that he came from Ur of the Chaldeans. And then he goes up north. He kind of follows the Euphrates River. And he goes up into a place called Haran. And when he stays there in Haran. Now, Haran is also a relative. But it's also the name of the place where he came through before he came to the Promised Land. It's also the place that Isaac went to get his bride. And when they come out of there, and we'll talk about this later as time goes on, for some reason when they come out of Iran, they call them Syrians. And there's a key to that as we start studying the Antichrist in the next few weeks, because when you go into Iran and come back, for all of a sudden, they're referring to them as Syrians. But here, he says that he died before his father Terah, and Terah was Abraham's father in the land of his nativity, and that's where he was born, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Now, here, this is in the same land, the same place that Babylon is. So Abraham actually leaves Babylon. He goes to Iran, and then that's north to northwest, then he comes south into the Promised Land. Now, that is actually the land of the Chaldeans, but what does it mean to be a Chaldean? Look with us in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 4. Now, the Chaldeans were very, very well-educated people. Now, when it comes to the sorcerers, the magicians, and the astrologers, they were kind of winging it. They had power, but they wasn't the educated crust that these people were. Children, and he's referring here to Daniel and the three Hebrews. He says, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science. Now, Daniel was in the three Hebrews with him, was very intelligent, and such as had ability to stand to them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. That's important because Daniel was looked at as someone that was capable with his wisdom, that he was capable of learning the tongue of the Chaldeans and the learning of the Chaldeans. When you go online and look at the 3D images of Babylon and see how detailed that city was and the architect and how well engineered it was, those people just didn't wake up and build that. They had water convoys. They had pumping systems that would pump water from the Euphrates up into the Hanging Gardens. And these mechanical pumps and stuff, we're talking about 2,500 years ago. So these people was well-learned, and Daniel was chosen because he already was skillful and cunning and knowledge and understanding science. Now, he got that back in Jerusalem before he left. And he got his master's degree in Jerusalem, and he's doing his postdoc work here in Babylon. And the Lord is using Daniel all the way on this. And that's a very important thing to know and note, that the Lord uses us and prepares us a lot of times for things down the road. So this was a scholarish thing. The Chaldeans were the more the scholars of the people. Now, with all that, let's briefly look at Ephesians 6:12. And the reason I want you to see this, it's very, very familiar scripture, but it's the Apostle Paul telling us what we deal with as Christians in this day. He says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Now, the thing that really prevents us from doing a lot of things that we would like to as Christians is those barriers right there. And those is barriers that standing in the front of every child of God, because Paul says that we wrestle not against flesh and blood. If all we had to deal with was just people, it wouldn't be as bad. But we're talking about, like there in Acts chapter 13, that man that was possessed, that man, this life who's been controlled by the demons, and that makes it even worse. So he tells us there in Ephesians that we have a battle before us, and it's a spiritual battle. It's not just something that we can deal with as we're dealing with people. Look at Daniel chapter 10, and look at verse 12. Now here, This is an important scripture because we go in the future a few years, and it's in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. And Daniel has been troubled, and the Lord shows him something, and Daniel wants to understand what's going on. So he says in verse 12, "Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thy heart to understand and to chasten thyself before the God, thy words were heard, and I come for thy words." Now, let me tell you what's going on. Daniel is shown something that's going to take place in the last days, and he's troubled because it's about his people, Israel. And Daniel begins to pray, and he prays for 3 weeks just for the Lord to send him an angel, a messenger, to tell him what's going on. So he says, "From the first day thou didst set thy heart to understand," he said, "I've been trying to get here ever since." Now, look what he says in verse 13. He says, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me." Now, we're talking about an angel that's coming to talk to Daniel that couldn't get there for 3 weeks because the Persian, this prince of Persia, withstood him for 21 days. Now, think about that. It's what Paul said, "We wrestle not with flesh and blood, but against principalities." And he said, "And lo, Michael," that's the archangel Michael, "one of the chief princes came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia." What's taking place? Verse 20. Now he said, "Then said he, Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee?" He comes, and it takes him 3 weeks to get there because of the resistance. Then Michael had to come in to even turn him away from the prince of Persia so he could get there. And he said, "And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia, and when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come." He's going back to fight the battle, and quick as he gets done with that battle, he's got to go fight the prince of Grecia. Now, the reason I want you to see that is Grecian, the prince of Grecia, don't even come about for 200 more years. When you're dealing with spiritual beings, time means nothing. When you're dealing with the Lord, You're dealing with Michael the archangel. You're dealing with any angelic creation of God. They don't wear a watch. They're not concerned about time. He leaves the battle of the Prince of Persia and goes to meet the Prince of Grecia, 200 years in the future.